Good morrow, and welcome to the realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe, and for those marking their first adventure into the realm, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis that specialize in a plethora of art forms. And as always, if you'd like to hear a little bit more from me or want to read my epic and dark fantasy tales, check me out at jvhilliard.com or follow me at jvhilliardbooks on Twitter, Insta, TikTok, and YouTube, or look for me as just J.V. Hilliard on Facebook or Discord. So as we reach the witching hour one more time, let me cast my message spell and take control of the magical airwaves of Blog Talk Radio. And for you D&D nerds out there, the duration of my transmutation magic this evening will last about 30 minutes. So set your sundials and let's enter the realm together. Today we'll be chronicling the adventures of a fellow speculative fiction scribe, Abigail Linhart. I'm a big fan. I've read her stuff. I've worked with her. And if you haven't picked up her Runer series, I just got book four and I'm ready to roll on that, but I haven't gotten there just yet. Abigail works part-time as a freelance ghostwriter, which I thought was interesting. She's the first ghostwriter we're going to have on the show. Obviously, she's an editor, and I'll have to say I've used her in the past, very good at what she does. She's her own audiobook narrator and does it for others. And is one half of a partnership that owns Altered Reality Magazine. We'll get into a little bit of that too. But she is somebody that I think, if you're a big fantasy fan like I am, or you like sci-fi or even horror, you might want to add Abigail Linhart to your TBR list. So, Abigail, welcome to the realm.
Thank you so much for having me on tonight. I'm real excited to be here.
It's my pleasure. Tell our listeners about you, what you write, and where they can find you.
So I write primarily dark fantasy. I dip into a couple of other genres. I have a romance out. I do a little bit of steampunk as well, but everything is under the umbrella of dark fantasy. So if you haven't read a dark fantasy steampunk, I recommend picking up my book, Prince of Midwest. It's very unique, I've heard. That's what the reviews say. You can find me online at abigaillinhart.com. I am also under the pseudonym Promthanius everywhere, including Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, and I even stream live on Twitch, and that's spelled Promthanius.
Thanks for that, and I've got to say this. Most writers write in one genre, maybe two, and they're usually kind of closely aligned with their writing in two. You write in many forms of speculative fiction. I've seen your sci-fi stuff. I've read your horror stuff. You mentioned romance. You got a little YA stuff in there with your dark fantasy steampunk. And of course, my favorite is your Runer series. Do you as an author find it difficult to cross the streams, or is it easy for you? I mean, I don't know if I could write in as many genres as well as you do. How do you do that?
Not to boast or anything, I personally find it very easy. The only genre I would say I'm a little bit weak in is science fiction, and that's just because my science in real life is pretty weak. I'm not a science math person.
That's okay. I get it.
So when it comes to the science fiction umbrella, I've mostly stayed with zombies and what I call space opera. I'm not sure if other people would like who defines space opera as what, but I wrote a Camelot trilogy that was kind of cyberpunky, kind of what I would call space opera. It was just very dramatic and, you know, took place in space. So I called it a space opera.
For me, space opera screams like Star Wars, right? Or Star Trek. Things like that too, but I see the crossover for sure.
I find it pretty simple for myself, but I think that's because everything falls under some form of dark fantasy. You know, everything is dark and dreary, lots of violence in everything. I even have violence and darkness in my romance fantasy that I wrote some years ago. But I've never found it that difficult. And I started writing in a bunch of different genres initially as an exercise, just to try and to see if I could. That was back in my academic days, back when everything, you know, had to be experimental and academic and philosophical, and I felt like I had to stretch my wings a little bit.
Well, do you have a favorite, or is it just like whatever mood hits you? I mean, if you like kind of say, hey, I'm going to do my dark fantasy runer stuff, or, you know, does it come to you and it's just what's in your mood, or do you have a favorite? How do you pick which one you're going to write?
So I line up my projects by year, and look at what am I writing this year? Might I end up be writing this year? Like, I have until I think 2027 plotted in what novels I'm going to be writing.
Well, I thought I was a planner. It sounds like you're the plotter extraordinaire of the two of us.
I am a religiously zealous plotter to the point where I pick unnecessary fights with panthers.
For those of you, and look, I know we have a lot of listeners that are readers, and not as many that are authors, but some that are authors. What the difference between a plotter and a pantser is very simple. A plotter is somebody like Abigail and I who plot every aspect of our books. Pantser gets the name pantser because they fly by the seat of their pants, and they can just sit down like Stephen King and just start writing a novel, and it comes to them. She and I are in one group that are extreme plotters, and, you know, when she's picking a fight with a pantser, that's what she means. So go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but for those who don't know the nomenclature, we're going to define it for them.
No, that's good. Pantser is a weird word. I imagine some people might be like, okay, what are we talking about?
Well, no, you know what? I heard someone, I was talking to an author last night, just randomly, and she calls herself a plantser because she's both a plotter and a pantser. I'm like, that's fake. I don't believe in that. That's like, no. It's like, I'm not buying that for a second.
I definitely heard of those, and I know a couple of those, but I really think they're just pantsers in denial.
See, that might be the way to put it, right? They're really at heart, they're pantsers, and they just don't want to admit it because they don't want to feel like it's that out of control. But I can't write like that for all. I stall out. If you said, here's three words, go and write it, I can't do that. I have to write towards something. You know, and I'm glad to find a fellow plotter on the show. So, well, let's skip ahead a second. Let's talk about your Runer series, because I'm a big fan of it. I know book four was the most recent, and I haven't gotten to it. It's on my TBR list. What was your inspiration behind it? Because that is a really dark, awesome, like, fantasy series, but it's one that's pretty unique that, you know, I'd love to tell you, let you tell our listeners about a little bit here, because it's set in a different kind of a fantasy setting. So why don't you let them know a little bit about the Runer series?
So the Runer series takes place in a medieval Middle Eastern fantasy world. It's not your typical European medieval world, which I think is part of the draw to it. When people start reading it, they're like, oh, this is so weird. We're in the desert. There's hookahs and mint tea and stuff going around that you don't typically see in fantasy worlds, unless they are, you know, some culture that we run into along the adventure, which is good, and that inclusivity is good. But I think that's the main difference for most people, is that they're just not used to where it is set. And like you said, it is, I like to think that it's very dark and very violent. I tried to crank it up to a 10 and beyond in book three, with all the human sacrifice, and this is all the blood magic that goes on. What else is going on in this series? There's undead dragons. My antagonist is a necromancer, which is really fun. The inspiration for a lot of that, and the MacGuffin, if you will, that they're chasing this magic book, was inspired by the Necronomicon, of course. H.P. Lovecraft's Necronomicon, and his elder gods, and all that stuff that goes on in his dark universe. Obviously, I renamed it for my series, even though I love Necronomicon would have been just the perfect name for that book.
Oh, it's but so good. I had one of those when I worked at a bookstore when I was in high school, and it came in, and it was one of those that even if you were afraid to read it, you wanted to own it if you were like a dark fantasy person, just because the name was so badass, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a very badass name, and it has the word necro in it. And, you know, at first when I was trying to come up with a name for this magical book, I thought, oh, well, Nomicon, obviously, because that's the suffix you want to use with a book like that. And then I thought, well, what could the prefix be? And I thought, oh, necro, because he's a necromancer. Then I thought, wait, the Necronomicon exists. That's already something. I didn't make that up.
Yeah, no, I just watched Evil Dead Rise, and, you know, they've got their own form of that. And, you know, I also, I like the term grimoire, because it sounds like kind of gritty, and it's something that's scary, even though it might not be. It's just, it sounds like it. So I use that word a lot when I can get away with it, because some people know what it is. Other people have to go and look it up. But once you look it up, you're like, oh, that's pretty cool, right? So, like, I always like that, too. Well, you have two main characters that are nearly like anti-heroes. I mean, and what I mean by that is they're dark. You cheer for them as you read them, and but they seem misanthropic at times, where, like, bad things just happen to them. Do you enjoy writing main characters that way instead of more of a tropish sort of, like, you know, goodly, you know, Aragorn kind of, you know, or Frodo kind of character? I know you write dark stuff, so I'm assuming you like to write these kind of characters, but what was the inspiration behind them?
Well, so it's interesting. I do think about that. A lot of my main characters in my books they have a pretty bleak outlook on life. They are pretty dark. Play D&D, I play a lot of paladin people who are very righteous and very King Aragorn.
I can't imagine you of anybody playing a paladin. That is ridiculously opposite, like polar opposites. I love it.
Yeah, I literally just thought of that. I thought, man, everyone I play in D&D is so righteous, like so good. And, you know, they fight for the good, fight for their god and their cause. And but then my characters, especially, let's see, Sarek in the Runer series, he, especially in book one, mirrored a lot of what I was going through in my personal life at the time. And it was one of those things where, you know, get it down on paper so it's not inside you kind of thing. And his outlook on life, that I'm done with everything, I'm ready to die, nothing is going well, I have nothing left to give, I thought was more universal than it turns out it is. I thought a lot of people could relate to that, but the feedback I got when book one came out was how much people hated Sarek, about how doom and gloom he was, and how they didn't like his personality. And now, of course, everyone loves him now that we're up to book four.
I got hooked right away. I think the concept of what you did to create a Runer and what it meant, and it was basically, you know, a stolen life. Like he was still living, but this Runer, this creature that he had become in order to hunt other creatures. I thought it was a super cool concept, and I don't mind the dark. Like it's a turn away from what you're used to reading, right? So
I think so. I would like to think so. Yeah.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought. I apologize.
I was just going to say, on the other hand, there's, you know, Sybil, my female main character, who starts out very good, very bright, very ambitious, and super full of hope, and then just literally gets everything stripped away from her. And by the end of book three, she and Sarek have flipped world perspectives, actually, and she's very much more stoic and has a much more bleak outlook on life.
Yeah, you know, that's the turn, right? Where, like, Sarek, you miss the beginning. You're kind of learning on the fly, because you learn about him, his past, and you learn through his actions. Where she, you're looking at it in real time. When she by the end of, what was it, book one? Yeah, everything kind of turns, and you see this woman who's own, like, she's there for her people, and it's well-intended, and it's just how things sometimes go off the rails. And what she does... And you just don't expect it. Like, as you're reading it, you're like, no, really? You know, like that kind of thing. And, you know, because you just, you're not used to reading that kind of fantasy. And you're like, oh, yeah, this is dark fantasy. I should expect it. It has this Game of Thrones moment in there. And it's like, oh, you know, something bad's going to happen to someone good. And you just have to deal with it, right? So it's a lot of fun. Anyway, my listeners, as I said, are mostly readers, but we do have some authors here. So I want to drop some questions for those that are authors, and I want you to, you know, kind of, you know, from an author perspective, kind of, you know, answer some of these questions for them. So you're an indie author. You've chosen to be independent. And as such, you're in charge of your own marketing. You're in charge of your own sales. You do a lot of stuff. But as someone that's an indie author, what is the best money that you've ever spent as a writer?
I would not have said it before, but I recently did a local author fair in Wichita, Kansas, and I heard over and over again, everyone who passed my table said, oh my God, I love your covers. And one girl came, she bought book one, she left, and she came back about 20 minutes later, and she said, I'm sorry, I can't stop thinking about these covers. I have to buy the other two. And I just remember thinking, well, first of all, I wish that everyone who said they love my covers had bought a copy, but they didn't.
right.
But that made me realize putting as much money as I did into those covers was probably the best option that I chose for marketing, because I mean, in all honesty, I am absolutely garbage at marketing. I don't know how to do it, and that frustrates me. But the covers being eye-catching, everyone says get a good cover, and I did not believe them until a few weeks ago. So I would say the covers are the best investment that I've made.
I'll tell you this: there's a guy that I've worked with for the last couple of years in Australia that I've done some work with, and he told me that out of the gate. He said, when you're in a bookstore, the first thing that catches your eye is not the story that's in the book, it's the cover. And what's on the cover doesn't have to be what's in the book. It just has to be genre specific. It has to be something mm-hmm. that your readers are going to relate to. And it's going to be something that's eye popping. And then once they grab that book, the first thing they do is turn it over and read the blurb. You know, so you have to have a good blurb. So good cover equals good blurb. Good blurb means they're going to read the first couple of pages. And at that point, you could tell a good story. But you're not going to get to a good story until they get through 1 and 1A. So, you know, I agree with you. I mean, and I'm glad you said it, because I know a number of folks have chosen to go down that path, many of whom are listening now. And, you know, I think that to know that it's worth the money to put in and it's obviously paying dividends for you, then that's good. Let's switch this a little bit, because I know many of our listeners, too, as some of them are first-time authors, they're starting to receive some constructive criticism. But you, as an author, what was the toughest piece of criticism you've ever received as an author? And what was the best compliment?
The harshest piece of criticism I got, I would say there's two, and they both came from the same beta reader. One was I had this poem song thing in one chapter in Prince of Midwest that took me months to compose. And it was just a couple verses, and I threw it in there because in the chapter the people were celebrating. So I was like, okay, I'll throw in a couple of verses of the song that they're singing. And she commented on there, this is dumb. It makes me think of hobbits. Because it's dark and this gritty steampunk thing, and she said it was cringy and made her think of hobbits, and I was like, that is the last thing I need in this moment in the book.
Well, do you think, she obviously wasn't right, she just thought maybe because there was a song in a book that it reminded her of Tolkien, right? That's what it had to be, like, you know,
well,
someone's doing songs
first,
and whatever.
But the more I read it, the more I realized she was right. It was pretty cringy. And so I did end up taking it out. And I only remember bits and pieces of it. But I am glad I took it out, because I think it gave the wrong feel for that moment in the book. and what was going on and what was about to go down. And I think it was just, it was the right choice to take it out, even though, you know, I spent forever composing it and I thought it was great at the time. But sometimes when people tell you, like, this is not good, you need to take it out, you get mortally offended at first and you're like, no, you're wrong. But, you know, just something about it didn't sit right with them. So take a look at it and see if they're right or not.
You said you had, two. What's the second one? Yeah.
Yeah. So then the second time was it was the end of book two of Season of the Ruiner. I had a chapter in there that reintroduced the necromancer and this other character, Victon, that everybody loves. And it really took away from the ending of Sojourn, the second book, and planted us back in into the wider world, you know, after spending forever in this other country. And she said it felt like it was cheapening the ending and distracting from the entire book that had just, so I had to cut that whole chapter. And it was like a 4,000 word chapter, and I was really sad about it. But then I ended up reusing it again in book three, and it became chapter four. But, you know, it was, again, a chapter that I loved and I was super excited to write and I thought was going to make people excited for the third book. But she was right. It just, it took away from everything that happened in that second book.
Well, you know, for those of you that are authors or aspiring authors that are listening, we all have to kill some of our own darlings. I've done the same.
Yeah.
I feel her pain. Some things just need to hit the cutting room floor. You might not agree with them. And she did exactly what I've done. And sometimes you reuse them or you find a way to rewrite them and stick them in somewhere else because they're good, but they weren't good where they were. So,
yeah.
You know, keep that in mind. I think that's helpful. Now, let's flip the script. I mean, what's the best compliment you've ever gotten?
The best compliment I've ever got is the one you always want to hear. I was told that at the end of the third book, one reader sent me a message and she said, congratulations, you did it. I bawled like a baby.
There
and
you
I
go.
Was like,
there you go.
That's what I want to hear. I want to hear I made you cry.
Mine was, please don't kill a certain character. He's your Boba Fett. And I'll never forget that. I was like, oh, that's a good one.
I feel like
but
that
I'm not
going to
tell you what happened. I know. I wonder where that came from. So, hey, anyway, another thing, I know that some scenes are easier to write and others are hard. What, as an author, was your hardest scene to date in any of your books to write, and why was it so hard?
To this day, I feel like action scenes are the hardest for me to write, and that's because, I guess, despite the fact that they're action, I find them very boring. But on the other hand, I've gotten compliments that my action scenes are really good and really filled with tension and emotion. So I guess I'm doing something right there, but I always find them difficult to write. And oftentimes on a first draft, I'll just put in brackets and I'll type something like, the action happens, blah, 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 and then I'll move on.
And then fill in the blank later, right? Just come back to it.
Yes.
Well, do you have a favorite character that you like to write? I mean, in any of your books, is it, is there a reason why that's a favorite person to write? Is it someone that you've like patterned it off of or something like that? First of all, tell us the character you like and why. Put it that way.
So in book four, which isn't out yet, that will come out in November, we get to spend a lot of time in the headspace of my villain, Abigor Sharar. And I love writing from Sharar's point of view. That was just the most fun, to the point where I think he has 19 chapters dedicated to him in book four.
No spoiler alerts, because I just told you it's on my TBR list, right? So you know not to anything here for me. Okay.
No spoilers.
All right.
No spoilers.
All right, good.
So much. He is, I preach against self-inserts, but I feel like this kind of self-insert is okay. He is all the things that I hate about myself. He's, you know, very academic, very snobbish, very elitist. And not only that, but I named him after myself. His name is Abigor and I'm Abigail. And I loved delving into his mind in book four and finding all those dark corners that make him tick. It was very enjoyable.
Well, that's cool. Well, look, we're coming to the very end here, and I know that on my YouTube channel, you know what's coming next. We're going to do a lightning round. So before we run out of time here, I'm going to throw a couple of quick questions at you. Want some quick answers. So I'm hoping to catch you off guard with some of these, but we'll see how it goes. The first one is a little long, so forgive me. It's not a lightning round question in that respect, but I want a lightning round answer. So you're on a quest, and you find a treasure chest. And when you open it up, there's an item in there, and that item can be from any fantasy or sci-fi book except for your own. What is that object and why?
I would want it to be a wand from this other indie author I was reading recently. Her name is K.N. Nguyen, and the book is Dragon Script. And in it, these characters have these dragon wands, and each one has a specific power, and I would want a dragon wand.
Ooh, that's cool. I'm a big Stormbringer fan from the Elric, the Michael Moorcock books. I mean, I love Stormbringer. Is just such a badass weapon. I mean, I think I'd go either that or maybe Excalibur, but it would be a sword for me. All right. Secondly, you mentioned before you're a D&D player, and you kind of hinted at what you play, but do you have a favorite class to play, and do you have a favorite D&D race to play?
I love to play half-orc barbarians, and I love to play any kind of tank. So paladins, sentinels, those characters.
Hardcore hack and slash, right?
Oh, yeah. Let me deal damage and take damage.
All right, so, hey, we all have them, but name one odd writing habit you have as a writer. Something that would stun people, hopefully.
That would stun people? I absolutely have to write in my writing corner at home. I cannot write at work. I can't write at my parents' house. I can't write in a hotel room. I have got to be sitting in my corner facing the wall or I can't write.
Okay. All right. So I know this is a little bit cheap because I know you have two ferrets at home, but as a writer, if you had to choose a mascot or an avatar or a spirit animal for yourself, what would it be?
The Kraken.
Oh, I didn't see that coming in a million years.
I love Kraken.
All right. Like Clash of the Titans Kraken.
Yeah, like big sea monster, tentacle ships Kraken.
All right. Last question in the lightning round. I've never had anybody on this show from Kansas before, so what is your favorite thing about Kansas? And I know you're not native to Kansas, but you've been living there for a while. Tell everybody what you like about Kansas.
What I like about Kansas is that all of the big cities still have a small town feel.
Oh, like, well, that's cool. That's interesting.
Kansas City still feels like a small town. Wichita, Joplin, Missouri, which isn't far. Tulsa, Oklahoma, which isn't far from where I live. They're all like big cities, quote unquote, but they still feel small.
Well, look, we're coming to the end of our duration of my message spell here. As a fellow D&D player, you know what I'm talking about. And I can feel that magic fading from my wizardly eyes. So before it leaves me, I want to thank you again, Abigail Linhart, for being on the show and letting me conjure you into my realm, if only for a short time. And quickly, can you tell everybody one more time where they can find you and get your books?
Yeah, so you can find me and everything I do at my website, which is abigaillinhart.com. You can also find me on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Twitch under the pseudonym Promthanius, which is Promthanius. And you can also buy my books from my website as well as find them pretty much anywhere. Ebooks, audiobooks, and paperbacks are sold.
And I'll say this, I'm a big fan of the Runer series. I have her Prince of the Midwest book and haven't read it yet. Don't blame me for that. But if you're a fan of dark fantasy and you're a fan of action, I would highly recommend the Runer series. So, again, Abigail Linhart, thank you very much for being on The Realm. And to our followers, thanks again for lending your ear to us today. And until next time, I am J.V. Hilliard, and may your gods go with you.